Good morning and welcome back to Nahyami. Today we're going to be doing Ezra Perek Yud, the 10th and last chapter of the book of Ezra. This is a momentous moment. Ezra has now been conferred as leader of the religious leader of the newly fledgling state of Judea. And he's confronted with his first problem, which has been intermarriage. How does he deal with it? So upon hearing about it, we saw that he went into a fasting and mourning period. He prayed to God. He justified God's justice. It was a very strong speech that he gave in Perek Tes. What happens afterwards? So we're going to follow through in our Perek. Our Perek is made up of 44 psukim. A lot of it is lists, so the actual narrative itself is shorter. The first six psukim document how Ezra is in the middle of his praying, and as he's crying and he's prostrating himself in front of Hashem, in front of the Beis HaMikdash, all these others came and gathered around him. So there's men, women, children, and there's much crying going on. Everybody sort of joins in this. And an individual by the name of Shechaniah ben Yechiel gets up and he says, he's from Elam, and he says, you know, we've all sinned. We've all rejected God by marrying these non-Jewish women. He says, Ato yesh mikveh li Yisrael al zois. Is there a mikveh? We'll have to work out what that word means in just a moment. Is there a mikveh for the nation of Israel? He says, let's make a new covenant with Hashem that all these women from the outside will, and their children should be rejected to be put out because of the illicit or illegitimate relationships that have ensued. And he asks Ezra to stand up and to take leadership. We'll do everything you want us to. And that's what Ezra does. Ezra gets up and he makes everybody who's present, the priests, the Levites, the Israelites, all make a shavua. And he gets up in front of the Beis HaMikdash, and in the front of the Lishkat Yehochanan ben Eliashiv, and he still can't eat bread because he's still mourning. Okay, so this is the first step of the Perek. So a few basic questions: who are the women who are joining him? The Malbim says that these are the wives of the Israelites who married non-Jewish women on top of them, which means to say that at this point in time in history, polygamy was still an accepted practice. So these are the wives, the Israelite wives, who now have co-wives who are not Jewish, who are crying as part of the terrible tragedy of the social situation in Israel at this point in time. Shechaniah, this person who gets up, who is Shechaniah? The Dat Mikra of Mordechai Zer Kavod points out that it probably means Shechaniah ben Yechizel, who's mentioned already in Perek Ches above. What is interesting about him, as the Chida points out, is that he himself was not intermarried. Rav Steinsaltz points out that we see this to be true is because we're going to see a list at the end of the Perek of all those people who removed their non-Jewish wives. And what is interesting about it is that Shechaniah is not on that list, which means to say that he is very, very courageously getting up there and announcing that we have sinned. But this is to stimulate other people to get into to stand up and admit, even though he himself was not liable at this point in time. What does the word mikveh mean? So he asks, is there a mikveh for Israel? So the word mikveh can mean two things in this context. One is hope, from the word tikva. So he says, is there hope for us now that we've done so wrong, that the Israel has led to this sin? The other option, of course, as the Ralbag points out, is a mikveh as a body of water, purifying body of water. This takes us back to the image in the last perek that Ezra described Israel as a nidah, as a person in the state of impurity. So in metaphor, is there a way to cleanse? Is there a way to come through this to purify? That's the question he's asking. It sounds like Ezra makes him take an oath. What is the oath? It sounds like he's ratifying the words of Shechaniah. Shechaniah says, we will take away, we'll end these relationships with these non-Jewish women. And he's saying, I'm making a shvua that you will follow through with this. Why is Ezra still fasting? Why is he not eating? So the Malbim points out that he already finished his fast. The technical fast had already finished. But he still couldn't eat. He couldn't bring himself to eat because of his terrible devastation at the situation as well. What you see here is an interesting thing, and that is that Ezra does not act first. Ezra's not the one who gets up there and bangs his fist on the table and starts sending out decrees. That's not the first step. The first step is that his genuine pain on the situation generates a reaction from the people, which he ratifies. That's an important point in terms of leadership. We'll have to contrast this to Nehemiah's way of dealing with this in a few prokems time when we get to Nehemiah itself. One interesting point that Rav Schwab points out is that there was something we need to think about is why is that there was such rampant There was such rampant intermarriage. And why is it specifically? It seems to be mostly the men to non-Jewish women, not the other way around. Why is that the case? So Rashab suggests maybe there were less women who made Aliyah in this wave, which means to say that there was a Shidduch crisis at this point in time. So that's perhaps one of it. It also could be that they wanted peace with their neighbors, which means to say that there was such attrition between the Jews and the older inhabitants that they, perhaps this was one way of attaining a degree of peace. And perhaps there was a Geirus process of sort, but it was perhaps not a sufficient process of conversion. We move to the next part of the Perek, Psukim Zayin to Tess, in which there's a call from to call everybody, all the inhabitants of this new commonwealth together to Jerusalem. And they had 3 days to get to Jerusalem, and if they did not, there would be Yochoram Kol Ruchushoy. There's going to be a Cherem. It's the first time we're seeing it used in this context. There'll be an enactment which will invalidate the ownership of all their properties, and this person will be rejected if they don't come. So everybody gathers together in Jerusalem after 3 days, and we're told that this is actually on the 20th of the ninth month. This is the 20th of Kislev. And everybody is standing in the street outside the Beis HaMikdash, and everybody is very concerned. They're trembling. Ala davar u'me'agashamim. Because of they're obviously very worried. This is obviously a very important decision and a very important discussion which is about to happen. They perhaps don't know what is the contents of this, but they know it's very serious. And it's also raining, so the mood is very dismal. The mood is very foreboding. It's worthwhile noting, by the way, that Chazal learned from here the halacha of Hefker based in Hefker, that the rabbinic court have the capacity to be able to make ownerless the property of others, and at certain in specific situations. It's learned from here because based on the license that Artaxerxes gave to Ezra, he's now using the right to do this, which is what he was allowed to do. But there's obviously a Torah law which he's enacting as well. That's what Chazal see from here. And we see from here the emergence of a new age of leadership, not the prophets, but the sage. Now we're seeing the institution of rabbinic Judaism, right? So this is, as the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah described at the beginning of Pirkei Avos, Asus Yag LaTorah, to make guidelines and guardrails for the Torah. We're now seeing institutions of halacha being created by a very strong rabbinic leadership. This is the next wave into the era that we live in today. Then we move into further into the Perek, Psukim Yud to Yud Zayin. In this section now, Ezra gets up. He's called Ezra HaKohen. We know he's a priest. And he gets up and he says, and he point blank accuses everybody by this terrible assimilation and intermarriage which has gone on. And he turns to them and says, Tnu Todah, give Todah la Hashem Elokei Avoseichem. Todah usually means thanksgiving, but in this case it means vidui, confession. It means recognizing that you've done wrong. And he says, you need to do two things. Hibodu me'am ha'aretz, stop the assimilation. And number two, mina anashim anachriot, and from the intermarriage. Assimilation starts the process of intermarriage. You can't say you're going to stop intermarriage without stopping the process of assimilation. You can't be living in the same neighborhoods. You can't be going to the same schools. It's not going to work. And the people answered and they said, you know what? He says, we will do everything you say, but there's one problem. Technically speaking, it's raining. We're all outside in the frigid cold. We can't do this in one day. This is a very big project. So it's not even for a two-day project. They respond. They say, establish executives who are going to be in charge of all of this process. And we will go through this and we will investigate every single case. And it's gonna, and we will follow through with this. And that's what happens. It says that they establish certain people, Yonatan ben Asael, Yachazkia ben Tikva, and it describes how they started doing this, and they set up this process which starts at the beginning of the 10th month, the beginning of Teves, and they this whole process goes on all the way to the 1st of Nisan, where there is this separating of relationships. So it's interesting, when Ezra says this, just a few points to ponder, he accuses them all, Atem Altem, you're all of you. But it wasn't all of them, as we'll see by the numbers. So why is he accusing all of them? So the Malbim says, because there's a certain communal responsibility. You know, we like to turn blind eyes to our brothers and sisters when they do bad things, but that we also bear a responsibility in trying to help them in the situation that they're in as well. It's also noting an interesting wordplay in Pasuk Tes Zayin about, he said he's going to wait until the 10th month, the Daryosh Hadavar, to search out the matter. Daryosh is an unusual word. It means lidrosh, to search out, to investigate. But it also means, it's the same letters as the word Daryavesh, which is Darius, which so to speak is the license that he has for this whole process as well. Just in terms of putting that into perspective. The reason why it takes time to research this is because there may have been actually valid conversions. So every single case needed to be judged on a one-by-one basis. And then now the rest of the parak, essentially the rest of the parak is a list of names. It's from Psukim Yurches to Tchel Chalpeis. It's a list of all those Kohanim, or the priests who rejected their, who ended the relationship with their non-Jewish wives. Then the Levim from Psukim Chav Gimel to Chav Dalet. And then all the Yisraelim from Chavei to Mem Gimel are a list of all the people who rejected or ended their relationship with their non-Jewish partners. And it says, Kol Eile Nasu, Nashim Nachrios, Yesh Mehem Nashim Vayasimu Vanim. And some of them had had children from them. What happened to the children? Rashi says that even the children were also sent away as well. It was going to be a complete cold turkey. This is no connection as well. Why are all these people listed? So Rav Schwab says it isn't to embarrass these people. They're given by name in this whole list yet. It was rather a badge of honor. These people believed so strongly that they, in fact, could make such a terrifying sacrifice in a relationship with which they already invested themselves in. Shows an immense amount of belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is a badge of merit, in fact, as well. Is this the full list of people who intermarried, or were there more who did not comply? So it's confusing, because it sounds like everybody answered Ezra and said, yes, we're going to do this, just give us time. So the Da'at Mikra says, you add up the numbers, there's 17 Kohanim, 10 Levim, and 86 Yisraelim, which gives us a sum total of 113 individuals. So the Da'at Mikra, Rav Mordechai Zerikow, believes that this is clearly not all the people who intermarried, and this implies that Ezra was not fully successful, but we need to wait for Nehemiah to see that the full implementation of his plan. We'll see Nehemiah's methods are somewhat different to Ezra's methods. Rav Schwab seems to assume that no, this was the sum total of people who intermarried, which means it's 113 men out of roughly 50,000 men, so the rate of assimilation was pretty low, considering, certainly contrasted to today. The question now is, how can the book of Ezra end like this? And the answer is, it hasn't ended. In fact, in the way that the canon of Tanakh is assembled, this is still the middle of the book. Nehemiah is part of the book of Ezra. It happens to be published separately, and we're going to look at Ezra and Nehemiah as a separate book, but really as a continuation of the same story. So we're not really ended, we're just waiting to continue. So as much as we're ending Ezra, we're really actually entering Ezra Part 2, which is called now, colloquially, as Nehemiah. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.